Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis from News 2, Parker Kelly, Ian Safar behind the glass, making it happen. Happy Wednesday, Nashville. Going to be a fun one. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Corey, how's it going? Thanks for coming in.
Word, I made it on time today.
Yes, yeah, even with some bad traffic out here.
Well, that was past the station for me. And so, of course, today, you know, normally I give myself 10, 15 extra minutes. Today I gave myself 30 extra minutes. So, of course, there was no traffic and I got here like 30 minutes early. But you know what? I'd rather be early than late.
That is true. I'm grateful. And it always is hit or miss. If you leave early, you're going to be here
early.
If you leave on time, traffic will make you late.
The good news is anybody watching on the stream knows I've got a big full cup of coffee and I'm ready to rock and roll.
There you go. Yeah, I will mention I have coffee too. The station got their caramel coffee back. So if you smell it, it's going to be a good day knowing that the golden caramel coffee is back in the kitchen here. Already made my day at 9:02 a.m. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to text or call. Our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Corey, the game on Sunday, Titans lose 20-12 in Denver. And last week when you were on, we had the conversation of if you can get Cam Ward the ball.
This is exactly what I wanted to talk about.
This is what I was thinking yesterday. I was like, where do I want to start with Corey? I was like, this is exactly where we have to start. Last week we said if you can get the ball to Cam Ward with a chance to tie or win the game in the final couple minutes, you did great.
Yes, you would be so excited about, you know, hey, we went toe-to-toe with the Broncos.
Right.
We gave Cam a chance to see, and we're not talking about
that. Because no one would have guessed the way we got there is the way that we got there.
Yeah.
And it feels completely different than the way you would have expected. If somebody told you, hey, game ends 20-12, Cam Ward had a minute to go down the field and try and tie at the end.
Yeah, we'll take that.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
But the way that it happened was just completely off the rails from what anyone would have expected.
You know, first off, and I'm not trying to blow sunshine up anybody here, but the defense was better, right? I mean, largely. I mean, you held the Broncos to 20. You'll take that.
Yeah.
You'll take
forced
that.
Three turnovers?
Yeah, four overall with one on special teams.
Right, yes.
And then the other thing is special teams. Special teams was much, much better than a year ago.
Funny what a competent coordinator can do.
Yeah. I mean, they made plays. Hecker shook off the poor preseason and was tremendous. Joey Sly was great. So two of the three facets you were very, very, very good in. And then, you know, look, we knew it was going to be a struggle to protect. I think it was more of a struggle than we were hoping for. You know, I think we were all looking for it to be to stand up a little stouter because there were times where it was a jailbreak back there.
Yep.
But, you know, when decision making by the coach is the overwhelming sentiment after the game, that's a position a coach doesn't really ever want to be in. You don't want to be what is seen as holding the team back. All right. You know, you know, like the referees are better to be, you know, not seen.
Right.
You know, coach is probably better to be not seen unless it's like, wow, that was a great call. But, you know, instead, you know, he's got two major things right now where people are like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you'd love to have a coach who wins you a game. Like, there are times where
Vrabel special.
Right, where Vrabel, the Texans game a few years back, where he ran the 12th guy onto the field, and it ended up working out that they got the ball back and had a chance to go win it in overtime. Like, that it's very rare that you can look at a game and say, that decision by the coach won us the game.
Remember the punt game shenanigans with the Patriots?
Yeah, with Belichick in the playoffs. Like, it is rare that you can look and say, yeah, the head coach may have won us that game with that decision. But if you're going to be an NFL head coach, you can't be the reason your team loses.
Well, how about Sean Payton with his decision to throw that ball on fourth down? I mean, if Cam Ward goes down and scores, Sean Payton's getting flambéed this week. What are you doing?
That is true. And out of all of the options he had at his disposal, I think he chose the worst one.
Yeah.
And if Bo Nix had read the play the right way, it probably still works out. Cortland Sutton was wide open on the other side of the field. I don't know what the read was or anything on there. Like,
but you made it an option.
Right.
And sometimes, like the Titans found out at halftime, you can't make the bad alternative an option.
Yes.
You just need to go away. You just need to get to the locker room. And I think both coaches were guilty of just not getting to the locker room.
Yes. I mean, in that situation, your options, it was what, fourth and two. So you've got a 53-yard field goal,
yep.
Or you can go for it on fourth and two. If you succeed at either
or
of
you
those.
Or you could punt.
But if you succeed with a field goal or convert on fourth and two,
the game is over.
You can take a knee. Or, I mean, if you kick the field goal, you kick it off, but the Titans would be down two scores at that point. It would have been over.
Or you've got a defense that's been completely dominant all day, and you can pin them deep.
Make them go 90 yards.
Make them go 90 yards and get a two-point conversion.
It was one of the stranger decisions that we saw on Sunday, and that's saying something because we saw a lot from Brian Callahan.
Yeah.
And so Sean Payton gave them a chance, and it was tough to see the drops on that final drive. Not that we don't know whether the Titans would have been able to actually get it into the end zone. They hadn't been able to do it all day long.
Well, I mean, they did get the ball and didn't do a whole heck of a lot with it.
Right.
I mean, it's not like if Cam Moore put it on somebody, they were going to catch it.
Right. So. And he did. I mean, the Chig one would have been tough, but the throw to Calvin Ridley on that last drive hit him right in the hands.
Well, I mean, look, there were a couple of plays where you go, that's tough. I mean, the deep one over the middle to Ridley just hit him on the fingertips. And it's tough. These guys get paid to make tough plays. And I know I get criticized for being unrealistic or too hard or too difficult. It's like, you know, here's a play that we haven't talked about at all. But it's the difference between winning and losing. Because there are a handful of plays in a game truly that decide winning and losing.
Yep.
All right. Imani Hooker jumps the route.
Should have been pick six.
Yep. Don't tell me that's why he plays defense. They hit the jugs machine just like everybody else. He makes over $10 million a year.
Yep.
And he's a very good player, but you have to make that play. Because what is it? It's the difference between winning and losing. It's 6 points.
Right.
It's 6 points.
You didn't score a touchdown all day. And that could have been a huge play. He read it perfectly. It reminded me of the game against the Rams.
Kendall Brooks play in the preseason.
Well, that one, I was thinking of the Rams back in 2021 where Kevin Byard jumped Matthew Stafford and took it back for six. Like, he read it the exact same way.
Yep.
It just bounced off his fingertips.
Yeah, but it can't. It can't. You have to make that play. When the opportunity presents itself, you have to make that play. It's like, here's another one. Jadeveon Clowney gets a free rush on Joe Burrow, like week two or three or whatever that was, and whiffs on him.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to make that play.
Right.
I mean, that's what you get paid to do. That's the difference between winning and losing. Like, you talk about Bo Nix, you know, not finding Cortland Sutton wide open.
Right.
You have to make that play.
Yeah.
That's the difference between winning and losing. Now, they got away with it. The Titans didn't.
Yeah, and it is true. That Hooker play, no one has talked about it.
No.
It kind of just fell to the wayside because of everything else that went on in that game.
And it's like you get a pass because you're a defensive player. And you don't get a pass. Make the play.
And I did mention on Monday the play, Imani Hooker. It ended up working out. It led to the Tavondre Sweat stuff on fourth and inches. But not wrapping up on Cortland Sutton on third down there almost cost the Titans because they initially ruled it a first down. Brian Callahan does challenge and Sweat makes the play. But easily they could have run the clock out from there if Hooker just needs to wrap up.
And that was an unbelievable play by Sweat.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what we talk about when you get a chance to make the play.
Yep.
You know, I had like 30 seconds before that play said to Julian in the sports office, I haven't heard Tavondre Sweat's name called all day. And boom!
The close-up of Sweat, like, he did not get touched by an offensive lineman. The first player he contacted was Bo Nix.
Yeah, and he must have just timed that thing up perfectly.
Yes. It was a really impactful play. Probably should have gave the Titans an opportunity to go and tie the game. I mean, they had a short field down by eight. I believe, was that where Ward took the intentional grounding?
And that kind of
killed the drive. I think that sounds about right.
I mean, look, the pressure was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was tough. He did not have an opportunity. Yeah. 7829 on the text line says he did make the play. It's literally a pass breakup for Amani Hooker.
No, that's not the play. But the play is a touchdown for the Titans.
Right. It should have been a touchdown.
Okay, so never mind. I'm not going to have that conversation.
Well, the text line this week, I haven't really understood the audience because
did it hit both hands?
Right.
Did it hit both hands?
7988 says, let's not do another show where we say the same things on Cali dysfunction when there are plenty of other things to talk about. Like, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on Callahan today. We're going to spend some time on it because it is the story coming out of Sunday's game. Like, this isn't something that you spend one day on and move on when your coach doesn't know the rules and he makes a horrible game management decision at the end of the first half. So we are going to talk about it. 8395 saying, the radio guys this week have driven me crazy. The conversation was about what constitutes success, and you guys said it down by one with a minute left and the ball in your hands. Like, yes, that is what we said was success, but when your head coach could have had you winning that game at the end, that's not success.
Well, you know, and as I did I do power rankings every week, and I was doing my power rankings last night, and I was trying to consider where to put the Titans, and for as much of a bad taste you have in your mouth in that game, you do have to consider the defense was very good. You do have to consider the special teams was very good. You do have to consider you liked a lot of what you saw from Cam Ward.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to move them up.
Yeah.
Because they were competitive with a playoff team on the road. And I think what's been surprising for me is we always talk about the national perspective and how the Titans just get either ignored or bombed nationally. I think the national perspective for the Titans this week has been a lot better than the local perspective.
Yeah.
Because, we're all hyper-focused on the mistakes that were made, perceived mistakes that were made by the head coach.
Right.
And so I think there's a difference in perspective there. And I think if you take this the view from 30,000 feet and you go, okay, this was better. But, the other thing we didn't talk about is 13 penalties.
Right.
And that's, that was the emphasis the entire offseason. And again, that has you questioning the head coach. They did the preseason, they were one of the least penalized teams in the league. And so is this an aberration because of all of the pressure that was on them? Or is this more of what we're going to continue to see? And I think that's, it's very early. It's very early. And I think what we all need to consider, and again, I'm going to sound like I'm blowing sunshine on people, but if they can be that competitive week in and week out, they'll win some games.
Yeah, and Brian Callahan is not going to get fired this week. Like,
no.
He's going to be on the sidelines on Sunday and have a chance to prove that was more of a fluke than it was.
Look, every coach in the league, except for Andy Reid, just about, is coaching for their job.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But his is more extreme. And he's dug himself a hole. I'm not sure the IO manner, and I know you don't want to go all day on all this stuff. I'm not sure that is as simple as it sounds with people.
Yeah.
Because I'm more on Paul Kaharsky's train here. I think he got bad advice. Now, I think how he answered the question after the game.
Right.
It's like they say the cover-up is usually worse than the crime.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my guess.
Usually you'd guess the head coach isn't the one who is looking up at the video board and making a decision whether to challenge or not. Like, that's not how that goes.
I've covered this league a long time. The head coaches, whether they're good or bad, are usually pretty smart. And one thing they usually have down is the rule book.
Right.
And if you listen to his Twisted Pretzel press conference Monday, when pressed on it and you saw him get aggravated, he's like, I know the rule.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, he knew the rule. He got bad advice.
That would be my guess, too. But, the buck stops with the head coach.
Yes, it does. And that's ultimately why he took the blame.
Right.
Because, it's the whole Captain Kirk thing. He's responsible for conduct of ship and crew.
Yep. Yep, that is true. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your texts. We are going to do a panic meter on some of the things that went wrong for the Titans. Because I think some of them, you do need to raise some red flags.
Sure.
Some of them, maybe it's just a one-week thing. We'll talk about that later this hour. I did want to start with Cam Ward's debut with Corey, because there have been a lot of different opinions on how Cam Ward has done this week. And Dan Orlovsky, I think, had a really good breakdown of the film from Cam Ward. We'll talk about that coming up next here on this Wednesday. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.
I was like blown away by his tape. I thought his tape looked awesome, dude. Like, he throws deep. Tennessee's got a guy. Like, Tennessee's got a guy. Like, this guy's talent of throwing a football is off the charts. They win the game if they don't have like eight drops. I counted for the, that play's awesome. That's like, that reminds me of like Joe Burrow-ish type stuff. I just, the ability for him to thread the needle on some of the throws and just to cut the ball loose with what he's looking at, I was wildly impressed with. I mean, that defense is awesome. Awesome. And he made some throws that were, I mean, dude, I got drops on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 drops. He cuts it loose, man. He is crazy talented throwing the ball. Now, I'll give you two things. Like, yes, there are times when he's got to be like, Cam, you can't take that sack. Like, he takes back-to-back sacks that takes him out of field goal range. He did that in college. He's got to learn from that. He will, would be my expectation. And there are also some times that he fires the friggin' ball in there. And I'm like, could you have taken a little bit off to help him? He's got the, like, the touch. He does. This isn't a, you know, there's some guys who throw everything as a fastball. That's not, like that's not the case here. I just, that throw's sick, I'm telling you. I mean, he's got, I wish I had B-roll for you guys. He's got eight drops that you're like, yo, that throw is off the chart. So
that was Dan Orlovsky on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday going through Cam Ward's debut. And I think maybe it's a little over the top on the praise for Cam Ward. The stats definitely don't show how well Cam Ward played.
Sure.
When you're 12 for 28 for 112,
yeah.
112 yards. Like, it wasn't great statistically, but when you watch the film, you can see, yeah, his supporting cast let him down a decent amount.
Well, Gunnar Helm has the bobble, which, you know, I think is a catch. Because
I was surprised they overturned it.
Well, because he had the ball and the arm comes in there, and there is leeway now for control.
Yeah.
He had control. There was definitely not enough there to overturn that call.
Yes.
That was a bad overturn in my estimation.
I agree. I was surprised when they came back from commercial break and they said that it was overturned. I don't know if there were eight drops. Like, 8 from Orlovsky seems high.
Is the Calvin Ridley over the middle where it hits his fingertips a drop?
And the Chig one up the seam, that one was a tough play to, like,
I know, but I'd like to see those guys make both those plays.
I'd say, yeah, you could find 8 catchable passes that Cam Ward threw.
Well, now, Io Manor is not a drop, but it's ruled out of bounds, and it's a catch. So you got two big plays there. That's at least 35 yards with those two.
Yeah.
To add to his total. And like he's talking about the ability to cut it loose and thread the needle. He certainly did that.
Yes, he did.
He certainly did that. Now, I am more critical of some stuff and, you know, right or wrong. I still think he's a tremendous talent and going to be a great quarterback. Don't mistake that. But he bears some responsibility, certainly not all of it, in taking points off the board. I know I'm going to get a lot of criticism for that's fine. That's fine. I don't care. Part of playing quarterback is minimizing damage. And there was a play or two where he didn't minimize damage. He maximized it.
Yeah.
And that hurt the team. Now, he's not trying to. I know that. I know he's better than Will Levis. I know that. And he'll learn. But it's that situational awareness like that Joe Montana had and Peyton Manning had that, hey, I just got to get down here. I'll take the 3 yards or throw it away. But I can't go backwards.
Right. Cam, that was the one area where you saw him struggle was when pressure came and he didn't have an answer.
There was no outlet.
What was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
And he took those two back-to-back sacks that took them out of field goal range after the muff punt. And then we mentioned after the 4th and short where he did try and throw it away, but he didn't really have awareness of where he was in the pocket because he drifted left to start and then rolled back right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he was like, oh, I rolled right. I'm out of the pocket. I can throw it away.
But he was still kind of
right in the middle of the pocket.
Yeah, and that will come with experience for him because of how big the box is and the NFL rules of just getting out of the box and putting the ball across the line. But yeah, I mean, look, that was an unfair situation for a lot of quarterbacks. You know, I'm from Chicago. I watched the 85 Bears make every quarterback they played except for Dan Marino look silly. So, yeah. I mean, it can happen to anybody. Every quarterback is great until they get punched in the mouth.
Right.
I mean, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes lost the Super Bowl 2 times.
Both weren't close.
And because he got punched in the mouth
right.
big time. And the Bucs really, really gave it to him. And so any quarterback is fallible when you just bum rush him all day.
Yes. And for Cam Ward, 12 of 28 is not great. But you look at it, he probably with the Gunnar yeah. Helm catch, with the eye manner catch and a couple of drops, he could have easily completed 17 or 18,
yeah.
and he'd sure. be over 200 yards at that point. I think it was a solid first game for Cam Ward. We've got texters saying, talking about the drops from Calvin Ridley. Like, the one you were talking about where it hit his fingertips, I yeah. don't know if you call that a drop.
Yeah.
It was a catchable pass. The other two to Calvin Ridley were both drops.
Yes, absolutely.
The dig over the middle, yes, the safety was coming up and hit him after he caught.
He got up that time and said, that's on me.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm glad you're accountable, but catch the ball.
And then the one where you saw Cam Ward's dad get up and just beside himself.
Yeah.
Yes, that one was a bad drop, and that was a bad drop at a horrible time to have that drop.
Yeah.
So Cam Ward, I think he did a good job in his first game. He looked he did not look like
he wasn't overwhelmed.
He looked like he belonged.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mentioned yesterday. I should have looked up who the Denver beat writer was who put this out there, but he said that there were Broncos defenders yeah. praising Cam Ward in the post-game locker room, saying he's going to be a guy. And,
yeah.
you know, it's a really good defense, and I felt like the biggest thing for Cam Ward, he didn't put the ball in danger. Like, yes, the sacks were bad. He helped yeah. in taking 3 points off the board, but
there wasn't a near interception.
There were
there?
No turnover-worthy throws.
Yeah.
On Sunday, which is huge because you look through the preseason and there were a couple where you're like, that one, he got away with one there.
Yeah.
The one against Tampa is the one that stands out.
Yeah. So, you mean, you're talking about, you know, like managing the game. You know, like you said, there were times where he can minimize damage better.
Right.
You know, you can't take points off the board. And so, you know, that can get better. But, you know, actually unleashing the ball, you know, he seemed to find people and give them a chance to make plays. At some point, they've got to make plays. You know, and something we haven't talked about here is, you know, Iamanner had 7 targets.
Yep.
And that tells me he gave Cam a chance. You know, Cam is looking at him saying, all right, I'm going to throw you the football. Nobody else is getting that many targets. I mean, I don't know how many Ridley
I think had 8.
Had 8.
But yeah. only caught 4 of them.
Yeah.
And a couple were like little, I think they gave him a target on the screen pass where no one looked for the ball.
Well, I think he was supposed to be the receiver there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
he just didn't know it.
Right. And Iamanner, I saw this was from a fantasy outlet. Iamanner had the most unrealized air yards across the NFL on Sunday. So on targets, if he had caught all of them,
okay.
it was like 120 unrealized air yards. So yes, he is getting some volume in this offense.
Yeah. And so I think that's promising because, you know, I mean, the catch he doesn't get credit for is a great catch.
Yes.
And that's a great play.
Right. And that makes his day look a whole lot better if
yeah.
he has, what, 3 catches for 45 yards instead of
yeah.
2 for 20 or whatever he ended
yeah.
up with.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that was probably, what, 20, 25 yards down the field?
Yeah, because it was 1st and 20. It would have been a first down.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how far past the sticks he was. He might have been right
yeah.
there.
And again, so we'll talk about positives.
Right.
I think, you know, Iamanner was not overwhelmed in
no.
that game. I think Chimere Dike showed that he can help this football team.
Yep.
I think the big thing is, you know, the offensive line's got to be able to protect better. They've got to have more positive plays in the run game. And again, this is against one of the best defenses in the NFL. But when you come together as an offensive line, and it doesn't always happen in week 1, all right, they handle, I mean, I have been here since 2003, and I have seen some very good Titans offensive lines.
Yep.
And it didn't matter who they played. They got it done. All right. And so, you know, we'll see if this line with talent that you think should give them a chance can get close to that level. they got a long way to go from week one, without a doubt.
Right. And you look back at 2021, like, that offensive line did not look good early. The Cardinals game to start the year where Lawan got beat five times by Chandler Jones. Like, but by the end of the year, that was a pretty good unit. And so we'll see.
There was also the year that Lawan was suspended for the first four games.
Right. That was the year before.
And Saffold came in. And Saffold looked awful to start the year. And they didn't have Lawan. And you were like, oi. And that line ended up being pretty good.
Yep. The big question mark right now is J.C. Latham's health.
That's scary.
We will get an update later today on whether he's out on the practice field. I would guess no.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure Brian Callahan will update when he speaks this afternoon. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on Gwinnett at First Horizon Park. First pitch is at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. I mentioned earlier we're going to do a panic meter around the Titans. I have some of the big issues from Sunday's game. We're going to see how concerned we are for the long term coming up next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Perfect music here from Parker for this segment. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis from News 2. It is time to give our panic meter for the Titans. So I've got three. I've got the three biggest issues for the Titans on Sunday.
Okay.
We're going to go 1 through 10. 10 being most concerned for the long term. This isn't just one game.
Okay.
1 through 10. 10 means you are...
You're talking about for the rest of this
season. For the rest of this season, okay. Do you think it's going to be a massive issue? Or 1 is not a big deal, just one game.
Okay.
We're going to start with Brian Callahan.
Mm.
And I... Again, 1 to 10. 10 means you think he's a disaster and should be fired today. 1 is let's extend him for 5 years based off what we saw on Sunday. So where are you on the Brian Callahan panic meter after 1 week?
Well, it's tough because it's easy to focus on the glaring. But then you also have to consider, like I said, special teams was better.
Yep.
Defense was better. And he gets credit for that.
Right.
He's the head coach.
When you're in charge, it all falls on your
That's
shoulders,
right.
The good and the bad.
Were they ready to play? Yep, they were ready to play. Did they play hard the entire game? Yep, they played hard the entire game. Now, there were mistakes, 13 penalties, Calvin Ridley on the screen pass, guys drop balls.
Yep.
Is it on the coach that the guys drop balls? Well, I mean, ultimately, like you're saying, everything is.
Yep.
So the successes and the failures. But I think, you know, when you look at 3-15, that's the overwhelming number at this point. And you've got two tough games to start with, so you know I will put it at a 6 or 7.
Yeah,
6-7. Yeah, you know something like that.
Not on my bingo card to have Corey Curtis going 6-7 on the show today.
6-7. I have a 12-year-old daughter.
There you go.
I hear it all the time. I still don't know what it means.
I don't either. Like I feel like I have outgrown all of the like. You know, is it called brain rot? Is that kind of
yes.
all that stuff?
She
like,
says brain rot.
Yeah,
all the time,
like
yeah. I still don't know what that means.
No idea. I'm with you though. I was gonna say 6. I think because of how bad it was on Sunday with the decision making, and also you brought up the penalties too.
Yep.
When you spent the whole offseason talking about sins and making sure you don't shoot yourself in the foot. And you do it multiple times on Sunday.
Yep.
And again, not all of the penalties, I think, would fall under the self-inflicted negatives. Like Jarvis Brownlee Jr.'s got to be better at not getting called for penalties, but that's in the heat of the play.
He's so handsy, though.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get away with some, but most of the time I'm like, yeah, that's holding.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's,
yep.
He's got to be better, but I don't know if that falls in the sins, but like the Jeffrey Simmons defensive...
The pre and the post snaps are the worst.
Yes.
And if you can just eliminate the pre and the post, you can live with the in-play ones. And Brian's talked about that.
Yeah.
The in-play stuff is going to happen.
Yep.
All right? But the false starts, the offsides, and then I don't care how soft you think it was to call that penalty.
You can't do it.
It was unnecessary. And he's a captain.
Yep.
All right? It was a selfish... decision. That's all there is to it.
In that moment when you're just trying
down.
You are trying to get the ball back to your offense at all costs. Because if they don't get the ball, like you'd feel pretty stupid punting on that fourth down.
If anything, when he hears the whistle, he grabs Cody Barton by the back of the jersey
and
says, let him go.
Pulls him off, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know heat of the moment, blah, 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 blah. It's game awareness.
Yep.
And I will continue to preach game awareness, knowing when you're in field goal range, knowing when it's third down, knowing when it's time to take a chance, knowing when it's not. The great teams all have great game awareness, and they got to have better game awareness.
And the pre-snap penalties, Jeffrey Simmons gave Denver a first down in the red zone.
Third and five.
Right.
So when are they going to go hard count on you? When it gets you a first down.
Yep.
All right. So again,
that can't happen.
Game awareness.
And on the offensive side, the play before the Tony Pollard fumble, which who knows what the play call would have been if you don't get the false start on Kevin Zeitler. Like,
yep.
Jeffrey Simmons and Kevin Zeitler, those cannot be the guys who are hurting the team with penalties.
Yep.
Those are your veteran guys who have to be better. So I think with Callahan, I'm going to go with the six, because not only was the decision-making bad, the Iron Manor challenge, the end of first half sequence. Where,
see, that's the one. That's the one I'm most upset about.
That's the worst one. I mean, you took 8 seconds off the clock with 47 seconds left.
There's nothing about that that made, in his reasoning for it, I think it was Steve Lehman asked him, were you aggressive because you wanted to give yourself more room to punt? And he's like, yeah. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because that's what you're saying, you weren't looking to score. They only had two timeouts.
Right.
Take three knees and go to the locker room.
Or if you want to try and move the ball, put it in Tony Pollard's hands at least once on that drive. That way you at least force the Broncos to call timeout, or you can run 40 seconds off the clock and then take it into the locker room.
Okay. Again, I can't believe no one on the staff didn't run down and tackle him and take his play sheet away.
Well, that,
all right.
That,
I don't understand that decision making at all. There's I get a text from Joe Rexroad saying, you know, the answer doesn't make any sense on the Iowa Manor thing. Fine. There's no answer that makes any sense at all on what they did before halftime.
And the funniest part was, and we'll never get an answer on whether Brian Callahan called a play on offense after the Chimdike kickoff, but it looked like he did. Cam Ward was walking onto the field. He was looking back at the sideline, and Bones Fossil was sprinting down the sideline, putting up three.
Yeah.
And thankfully, he was able to make sure the offense didn't go back out there.
Now, you could have run out there and spotted the ball and called timeout.
Right, yeah. Like, they had a timeout. It wouldn't have been...
Like, if Sly wanted the ball somewhere else...
Yeah, you just
you
have
could
Cam
have
Ward
done that.
Dive and call. Yeah, so maybe that was it, but it looked like Cam Ward was walking out there to call play, and I'm like, you got 6 seconds. What exactly will that accomplish?
That would have been the perfect finish if they'd gotten no points out of that.
Yeah, yeah. If they gave the Broncos 7 points, then miraculously were handed three and still couldn't end up putting anything on the board.
Yeah.
7988, when asked about the panic meter, says, disappointment high. Panic, I mean, at this point, it's hard to panic. This is about being halfway through the time allotment of a terminal diagnosis. and then he goes, seriously, though, panic is mid. Murderous rage on losing from own mistake or with the score again, very high.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I think panic, maybe panic's not the right word, but frustration.
Well, again, for me, two aspects are improved, but the thing you focused on the entire offseason, not improved.
Yep.
Not improved. And so that's very concerning for me. All right. And the offensive line, do I think they'll get better? Yes, I do. But that's concerning for me. And the coaches 3-15, that's concerning for me. And so at some point, you can't just be nice and say, oh, it's a 3. I think they'll get it figured out.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that I think he's a nice guy and a hardworking guy, you know, and I think people respect him, you know, those are things that all weigh in his favor. But, I mean, I'll be honest with you. If this is Ken Wisenhunt and we're sitting here where we are, my panic meter's like a 9 or a 10.
Yeah.
But that's because I worked with Ken Wisenhunt and I heard the things he had to say. And, yeah, it would have been a 9 or 10.
Yeah. And we're around a 6. I think that's about fair. And if he has a couple of good games in a row, that hot seat will start to cool off a little bit. And I think the panic meter falls, but he has to show improvement.
Well, yes. In UK, you remember Will Levis after the Bears game?
Yeah.
There was a lot that was good in that game. First half, they were up 17-0. And Levis in the offense looked really good.
Yep.
You think, wow, they're onto something here. And then the second half's a disaster. And he makes the mistake and blah, 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 blah. So And then he repeats it against the Jets. This is my point. This week against the Rams, if Brian Callahan has another situation where everyone is questioning his decision-making ability,
right,
his knowledge of the rules, his offensive decision-making, if he has another one of those that blows up on him,
yeah,
it's going to be really tough for him to escape that
right.
narrative.
This is a massive week for Brian Callahan.
He's got to have a very good week.
Everything has to be better. Play calling, decision making, penalties, everything has to be better.
He needs to not be a part of the equation.
Yes. If we're not talking about Brian Callahan on Monday, then
it's a success.
It's a good week
for
Brian Callahan. 615-737-1025. We're going through our panic meter on the Titans. Two other things that I think you could qualify as big reasons why the Titans lost on Sunday: Calvin Ridley's drops and the offensive line. How concerned are we with both of those on the Titans offense? We'll get to that next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game has teamed up with Pella Windows and the Nashville Humane Association for a puppy pet adoption this Saturday at Pella, 256 East Main Street in Hendersonville from 10 to noon. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis from News 2, Parker Kelly with you on this Wednesday. We are going through our panic meter on the Titans. We started with Brian Callahan. Before we get into some of the other issues from Sunday, let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Oh, wow.
Bob is on the line wanting to talk about Brian Callahan. Bob, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I got two things here. I'll do one and then the other. First one, you talk about the panic meter, everybody worried. The only person I'm worried about right now is, I don't care about the media, I don't care about the fans. My concern is how much of a panic or concern or lack of faith will Cam have in Callahan if this keeps happening? And then the second part is, I know you probably grill me for this, but after all the drops on Sunday, what would be the harm of seeing what Restrepo could do? At least he seems to be able to catch the ball. He may not be the fastest or the biggest, but he can catch the ball. That's all I got.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I don't know about Restrepo.
I don't know that he was the difference. I mean, I understand. I mean, because like I think I said, hey, at this point, I'm ready just to roll out the rookies and see what they can do.
Yeah.
Because it's frustrating, because we saw some drops from Calvin to start early last year, and we're going to get to that in a second. He's like seventh. I'd like to see more Bryce Oliver.
Right.
I'd like to see more of him. But we'll see where we are. The Cam thing, Cam has preached wanting to have stability.
Right.
And so I think it's a reasonable question, because if Cam doesn't trust the guy sending him the plays, that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem. But I think Cam right now is probably more focused on the guys in front of him and them working as a cohesive unit to get protection worked out.
I don't know if I'm worried about Cam Ward losing trust in Brian Callahan specifically, but maybe some of the veteran players, if Callahan continues to struggle to put them in good situations, it's like, hey, we got you cannot be the reason we lose, and we've said that before. So I don't know after 1 week that's going to happen, but he's got to turn it around fast. Back to our panic meter. Bob mentioned the drops. Mm-hmm. Calvin Ridley, he had at least two drops on Sunday. You could argue three. And they all came on plays that would have been at least first downs, if not more. What is your panic level, 1 to 10, on Calvin Ridley this season? Do you think that is going to be an issue throughout the year, or is it just a bad game?
I'm going to say a 5, and a 5 for the same reason.
Yeah.
All right, because it happened last year. So disappointing that it happened last year, and now it's happening again. But what brings it down is he got it fixed last year. So hopefully it doesn't take him as long to get it fixed this year. Again, when you are a $20-plus million player, you need to be a reason they win and not a reason that they lose. All right? Hugely disappointing.
Yep.
All right? I'm sure Calvin is hugely disappointed in himself. He is an upfront guy. And I'm sure if I'd been in the post game, he would have said, I wasn't good enough today. C.D. Lamb dropped those three passes. And he knew. He let his team down. So it's a concern, and it's a concern because it's a repeat offense.
Yeah. I'll go a little lower. I'm going to say a 3 on Calvin Ridley. It was a bad game. And if you're looking for reasons the Titans lost on Sunday, he is for sure towards the top of the list. He's not at the top of the list, but he's towards the top of the list. And that's not just the drops. You know, if he does catch that screen pass, maybe the Titans don't give up that touchdown at the end. Like, yep. The Callahan decision-making is the
problem. It's not that he didn't catch it. It's right. that he wasn't in position right. to catch it, yes. which is an even worse mistake. Because yes. that's a preparation. That's a sin. Right?
Yes, a mental error, an ME.
Dropping the ball happens, you know. It's not great, but yep. it happens. But not being in position to make the play, that's a bigger problem.
Yes. The physical mistakes hopefully will sort itself out. Calvin Ridley gets some extra work in with Cam Ward this week, goes on the jugs machine. Hopefully it's not an issue. I'm going to go with a 3, but if it happens again this week and he is not a bigger factor, because he's not going to have Pat Surtain on him all week this week. Like, no. The Rams secondary is fine, but it's not the Broncos secondary.
They just did hold the Texans to 9 points.
Right. No, it's good. Good defense, but you don't have the defensive player of the year staring you across the line of scrimmage.
That's true. And that can speed things up for you big time.
Right. So Calvin Ridley's got to have a better game this week, but I'm not super concerned for the long term with him quite yet.
But I'm concerned about the consistency.
Right. Yeah. And that's fair. And we'll see if Cam Ward and Calvin Ridley, I mean, the whole conversation all offseason was how great their relationship and their chemistry yeah. was. And they not only weren't on the same page, but Calvin Ridley just could not catch the ball on Sunday. Yeah. So I'm going to go with a 3. I don't think it's quite as big of a concern as what we saw from Brian Callahan. We're going to get to the offensive line. We'll do that coming up next. We're also going to get into some college football. We've been talking about the two big games across the state all week long. Vols taking on Georgia, Vandy at South Carolina.
Both underdogs. And I like them both.
We're going to talk about who has a better chance to win this weekend and whose win would be a bigger win if they're able to pull it off. We'll do that coming up in the next hour. But we continue with the Titans Panic Meter coming up next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.